Chapter 3. When at 8 o'clock next morning, Ordynov, pale and agitated and still dazed from the excitement of that day, opened Yaroslav Ilyich's door, he went to see him, though he could not have said why, he staggered back in amazement and stood petrified in the doorway on seeing Murin in the room. The old man, even paler than Ordynov, seemed almost too ill to stand up. He would not sit down, however, though Yaroslav Ilyich, highly delighted at the visit, invited him to do so. Yaroslav Ilyich, too, cried out in surprise at seeing Ordynov, but almost at once his delight died away, and he was quite suddenly overtaken by embarrassment halfway between the table and the chair next to it. It was evident that he did not know what to say or to do, and was fully conscious of the impropriety of sucking at his pipe and of leaving his visitor to his own devices at such a difficult moment, and yet, such was his confusion, he did go on pulling at his pipe with all his might, and indeed with a sort of enthusiasm. Ordynov went into the room at last. He flung a cursory glance at Murin. A look flitted over the old man's face, something like the malicious smile of the day before, which even now set Ordynov shuddering with indignation. All hostility, however, vanished at once and was smoothed away, and the old man's face assumed a perfectly unapproachable and reserved air. He dropped a very low bow to his lodger. The scene brought Ordynov to a sense of reality at last. Eager to understand the position of affairs, he looked intently at Yaroslav Ilyich, who began to be uneasy and flustered. "Come in, come in," he brought out at last. "Come in, most precious Vasily Mihalitch. Honour me with your presence, and put a stamp of... on all these ordinary objects," said Yaroslav Ilyich, pointing towards a corner of the room, flushing like a crimson rose, confused and angry that even his most exalted sentences floundered and missed fire. He moved the chair with a loud noise into the very middle of the room. "I hope I'm not hindering you, Yaroslav Ilyich," said Ordynov. "I wanted the 2 minutes..." "Upon my word, as though you could hinder me, Vasily Mihalitch. But let me offer you a cup of tea. Hey, servant, I am sure you too will not refuse a cup." Murin nodded, signifying thereby that he would not. Yaroslav Ilyich shouted to the servant who came in, sternly demanded another 3 glasses, then sat down beside Ordynov. For some time he turned his head like a plaster kitten to right and to left, from Murin to Ordynov, and from Ordynov to Murin. His position was extremely unpleasant. He evidently wanted to say something, to his notions extremely delicate, for one side at any rate. But for all his efforts, he was totally unable to utter a word. Ordynov, too, seemed in perplexity. There was a moment when both began speaking at once, Murin, silent, watching them both with curiosity, slowly opened his mouth and showed all his teeth. "I've come to tell you," Ordynov said suddenly, "that owing to a most unpleasant circumstance, I am obliged to leave my lodging and—"
"Fancy! What a strange circumstance," Yaroslav Ilyich interrupted suddenly. "I confess I was utterly astounded when this worthy old man told me this morning of your intention, but—"
"He told you," said Ordynov, looking at Murin with surprise.
Murin stroked his beard and laughed in his sleeve.
"Yes," Yaroslav Ilyich rejoined, "though I may have made a mistake, but I venture to say for you, I can answer for it on my honour that there was not a shadow of anything derogatory to you in this worthy old man's words."
Here Yaroslav Ilyich blushed and controlled his emotion with an effort. Murin, after enjoying to his heart's content the discomfiture of the other 2 men, took a step forward.
"It is like this, Your Honour," he began,
bowing politely to Ordynov.
His Honour made bold to take a little trouble on your behalf. As it seems, sir, you know yourself, the mistress and I. That is, we would be glad, freely and heartily, and we would not have made bold to say a word. But the way I live, you know yourself, you see for yourself, sir. Of a truth, the Lord barely keeps us alive, for which we pray his holy will. Else, you see yourself, sir, whether it is for me to make lamentation.
Here Murin again wiped his beard with his sleeve. Ordinov almost turned sick.
"Yes, yes, I told you about him myself. He is ill. That is, this malheur. I should like to express myself in French, but, excuse me, I don't speak French quite easily. That is, quite so. Quite so. That is..."
Ordinov and Yaroslav Ilyich made each other a half-bow, each a little on one side of his chair, and both covered their confusion with an apologetic laugh. The practical Yaroslav Ilyich recovered at once.
"I have been questioning this honest man minutely," he began. "He has been telling me that the illness of this woman..." Here the delicate Yaroslav Ilyich probably wished to conceal a slight embarrassment that showed itself in his face, hurriedly looked at Murin with inquiry.
"Yes, of our mistress."
The refined Yaroslav Ilyich did not insist further.
"The mistress, that is, your former landlady. I don't know how, but there. She is an afflicted woman. She says that she is hindering you in your studies, and he himself. You concealed from me one important circumstance, Vasily Mikhailich."
"What?"
"About the gun," Yaroslav Ilyich brought out, almost whispering in the most indulgent tone, with the millionth fraction of reproach softly ringing in his friendly tenor. "But," he added hurriedly, "he has told me all about it. And you acted nobly in overlooking his involuntary wrong to you. I swear I saw tears in his eyes."
Yaroslav Ilyich flushed again. His eyes shone, and he shifted in his chair with emotion.
"I, that is, we, sir. That is, Your Honour, I, to be sure, and my mistress, remember you in our prayers," began Murin, addressing Ordinov and looking at him while Yaroslav Ilyich overcame his habitual agitation. "And you know yourself, sir, she is a sick, foolish woman. My legs will hardly support me."
"Yes, I am ready," Ordinov said impatiently. "Please, that's enough. I am going directly."
"No, that is, sir, we are very grateful for your kindness."
Murin made a very low bow.
"That is not what I meant to tell you, sir. I wanted to say a word. You see, she came to me almost from her home. That is, from far, as the saying is, beyond the seventh water. Do not scorn our humble talk, sir. We are ignorant folk, and from a tiny child she has been like this. A sick brain, hasty. She grew up in the forest, grew up as a peasant, all among bargemen and factory hands. And then their house must burn down. Her mother, sir, was burnt. Her father burnt to death. I dare say there is no knowing what she'll tell you. I don't meddle, but the chirurgical council examined her at Moscow. You see, sir, she's quite incurable. That's what it is. I am all that's left her, and she lives with me. We live, we pray to God, and trust in the Almighty. I never cross her in anything."
Ordinov's face changed. Yaroslav Ilyich looked first at one, then at the other.
"But that is not what I wanted to say. No," Murin corrected himself, shaking his head gravely. "She is, so to say,
such a featherhead, such a whirligig, such a loving, headstrong creature. She's always wanting a sweetheart, if you will pardon my saying so, and someone to love. It's on that she's mad. I amuse her with fairy tales. I do my best at it. I saw, sir, how she... Forgive my foolish words, sir, Morin went on, bowing and wiping his beard with his sleeve. How she made friends with you. You, so to say, Your Excellency, were desirous to approach her with a view to love.
Yaroslav Ilyich flushed crimson and looked reproachfully at Morin. Ordynov could scarcely sit still in his seat.
No, that is not it, sir. I speak simply, sir. I am a peasant. I am at your service. Of course, we are ignorant folk. We are your servants, sir, he brought out, bowing low. And my wife and I will pray with all our hearts for your honour. What do we need? To be strong and have enough to eat. We do not repine. But what am I to do, sir? Put my head in the noose? You know yourself, sir, what life is, and will have pity on us. But what will it be like, sir, if she has a lover, too? Forgive my rough words, sir. I am a peasant, sir, and you are a gentleman. You're a young man, Your Excellency, proud and hasty. And she, you know yourself, sir, is a little child with no sense. It's easy for her to fall into sin. She's a buxom lass, rosy and sweet, while I am an old man, always ailing. Well, the devil, it seems, has tempted your honour. I always flatter her with fairy tales. I do indeed, I flatter her. And how we will pray, my wife and I, for your honour. How we will pray. And what is she to you, Your Excellency, if she is pretty? Still, she is a simple woman, an unwashed peasant woman, a foolish, rustic maid, a match for a peasant like me. It is not for a gentleman like you, sir, to be friends with peasants, but she and I will pray to God for your honour. How we will pray!
Here Morin bowed very low, and for a long while remained with his back bent, continually wiping his beard with his sleeve. Yaroslav Ilyich did not know where he was standing. "Yes, this good man," he observed in conclusion, "spoke to me of some undesirable incidents. I did not venture to believe him, Vasily Mihalich. I heard that you were still ill," he interrupted hurriedly, looking at Ordynov in extreme embarrassment, with eyes full of tears of emotion. "Yes, how much do I owe you?" Ordynov asked Morin hurriedly.
"What are you saying, Your Honour? Give over. Why, we are not Judases. Why, you are insulting us, sir. We should be ashamed, sir. Have I and my good woman offended you?"
"But this is really strange, my good man. His Honour took the room from you. Don't you feel that you are insulting him by refusing?" Yaroslav Ilyich interposed, thinking it his duty to show Morin the strangeness and indelicacy of his conduct.
"But upon my word, sir, what do you mean, sir? What did we not do to please your honour? Why, we tried our very best. We did our utmost, upon my word. Give over, sir, give over, your honour. Christ have mercy upon you. Why, are we infidels, or what? You might have lived. You might have eaten our humble fare with us, and welcome. You might have lain there. We'd have said nothing against it, and we wouldn't have dropped a word. But the evil one tempted you. I am an afflicted man, and my mistress is afflicted. What is one to do? There was no one to wait on you, or we would have been glad, glad from our hearts. And how the mistress and I will pray for your honour, how we will pray for you.
Morin bowed down from the waist. Tears came into Yaroslav Ilyich's delighted eyes,
He looked with enthusiasm at Ordynov. "What a generous trait, isn't it? What sacred hospitality is to be found in the Russian people?" Ordynov looked wildly at Yaroslav Ilyich. He was almost terrified and scrutinized him from head to foot.
"Yes, indeed, sir. We do honor hospitality. We do honor it indeed, sir,"
Morin asserted, covering his beard with his whole sleeve.
"Yes, indeed. The thought just came to me. We'd have welcomed you as a guest, sir, by God, we would," he went on, approaching Ordynov. "And I had nothing against it. Another day I would have said nothing, nothing at all. But sin is a sore snare, and my mistress is ill. Ah, if it were not for the mistress! Here, if I had been alone, for instance, how glad I would have been of your honour! How I would have waited upon you! Wouldn't I have waited upon you? Whom should we respect if not your honour? I'd have healed you of your sickness. I know the art. You should have been our guest. Upon my word, you should. That is a great word with us."
"Yes, really. Is there such an art?" observed Yaroslav Ilyich, and broke off. Ordynov had done Yaroslav Ilyich injustice when, just before, he had looked him up and down with wild amazement. He was, of course, a very honest and honourable person, but now he understood everything, and it must be owned his position was a very difficult one. He wanted to explode, as it is called, with laughter. If he had been alone with Ordynov, two such friends, Yaroslav Ilyich would, of course, have given way to an immoderate outburst of gaiety without attempting to control himself. He would, however, have done this in a gentlemanly way. He would, after laughing, have pressed Ordynov's hand with feeling, would genuinely and justly have assured him that he felt double respect for him, and that he could make allowances in every case, and, of course, would have made no reference to his youth. But as it was, with his habitual delicacy of feeling, he was in a most difficult position and scarcely knew what to do with himself.
"Arts, that is, decoctions," Morin added.
A quiver passed over his face at Yaroslav Ilyich's tactless exclamation.
"What I should say, sir, in my peasant foolishness," he went on, taking another step forward, "you've read too many books, sir. As the Russian saying is among us peasants, wit has overstepped wisdom."
"Enough," said Yaroslav Ilyich sternly.
"I am going," said Ordynov. "I thank you, Yaroslav Ilyich. I will come. I will certainly come and see you," he said in answer to the redoubled civilities of Yaroslav Ilyich, who was unable to detain him further. "Goodbye, goodbye. Goodbye, Your Honour. Goodbye, sir. Do not forget us. Visit us, poor sinners."
Ordynov heard nothing more. He went out like one distraught. He could bear no more. He felt shattered. His mind was numb. He dimly felt that he was overcome by illness. But cold despair reigned in his soul, and he was only conscious of a vague pain, crushing, wearing, gnawing at his breast. He longed to die at that minute. His legs were giving way under him, and he sat down by the fence, taking no notice of the passing people, nor of the crowd that began to collect around him, nor of the questions, nor the exclamations of the curious. But suddenly, in the multitude of voices, he heard the voice of Morin above him. Ordynov raised his head. The old man really was standing before him. His pale face was thoughtful and dignified. He was quite a different man from the one who had played the coarse farce at Yaroslav Ilyich's. Ordynov got up. Morin took his arm and led him out of the crowd.
"You want to get your belongings," he said, looking sideways at Ordynov. "Don't grieve, sir," cried Morin. "You are young. Why grieve?
Ordynov made no reply. "Are you offended, sir? To be sure, you are very angry now, but you have no cause. Every man guards his own goods." "I don't know you," said Ordynov. "I don't want to know your secrets. But she, he brought out, and the tears rushed in streams from his eyes. The wind blew them one after another from his cheeks. Ordynov wiped them with his hand. His gesture, his eyes, the involuntary movement of his blue lips all looked like madness.
"I've told you already," said Murin, knitting his brows, "that she is crazy. What crazed her? Why need you know? But to me, even so, she is dear. I've loved her more than my life, and I'll give her up to no one. Do you understand now?"
There was a momentary gleam of fire in Ordynov's eyes. "But why have I? Why have I as good as lost my life? Why does my heart ache? Why did I know Katerina?"
"Why?" Murin laughed and pondered. "Why? I don't know why," he brought out at last. "A woman's heart is not as deep as the sea. You can get to know it, but it is cunning, persistent, full of life. What she wants, she must have at once. You may as well know, sir. She wanted to leave me and go away with you. She was sick of the old man. She had lived through everything that she could live with him. You took her fancy, it seems, from the first, though it made no matter whether you or another. I don't cross her in anything. If she asks for bird's milk, I'll get her bird's milk. I'll make up a bird if there is no such bird. She set on her will, though she doesn't know herself what her heart is mad after. So it has turned out that it is better in the old way. Ah, sir, you are very young. Your heart is still hot like a girl forsaken, drying her tears on her sleeve. Let me tell you, sir, a weak man cannot stand alone. Give him everything. He will come of himself and give it all back. Give him half the kingdoms of the world to possess. Try it, and what do you think? He will hide himself in your slipper at once. He will make himself so small. Give a weak man his freedom. He will bind it himself and give it back to you. To a foolish heart, freedom is no use. One can't get on with ways like that. I just tell you all this. You are very young. What are you to me? You've come and gone, you or another, it's all the same. I knew from the first it would be the same thing. One can't cross her. One can't say a word to cross her if one wants to keep one's happiness. Only, you know, sir." Murin went on with his reflections. "As the saying is, anything may happen. One snatches a knife in one's anger, or an unarmed man will fall on you like a sheep with his bare hands and tear his enemy's throat with his teeth. But let them put the knife in your hands and your enemy bare his chest before you. No fear. You'll step back."
They went into the yard. The Tartar saw Murin from a distance, took off his cap to him, and stared slyly at Ordynov.
"Where's your mother? At home?"
Murin shouted to him.
"Yes." "Tell her to help him move his things, and you get away. Run along."
They went up the stairs. The old servant, who appeared to be really the porter's mother, was getting together their lodger's belongings and peevishly putting them in a big bundle.
"Wait a minute. I'll bring you something else of yours. It's left in there."
Murin went into his room. A minute later, he came back and gave Ordynov a sumptuous cushion covered with embroidery and silks and braid, the one that Katerina had put under his head when he was ill.
"She sends you this," said Murin. "And now go for good, and good luck to you. And mind now, don't hang about
he added in a fatherly tone, dropping his voice, "or harm will come of it." It was evident that he did not want to offend his lodger, but when he cast a last look at him, a gleam of intense malice was unconsciously apparent in his face. Almost with repulsion, he closed the door after Ordynov. Within 2 hours, Ordynov had moved into the rooms of Spies, the German. Tinchen was horrified when she saw him. She at once asked after his health, and, when she learned what was wrong, at once did her best to nurse him. The old German showed his lodger complacently how he had just been going to paste a new placard on the gate, because the rent Ordynov had paid in advance had run out that very day to the last farthing. The old man did not lose the opportunity of commending in a roundabout way the accuracy and honesty of Germans. The same day, Ordynov was taken ill, and it was 3 months before he could leave his bed. Little by little he got better and began to go out. Daily life in the German's lodgings was tranquil and monotonous. The old man had no special characteristics. Pretty Tinchen, within the limits of propriety, was all that could be desired. But life seemed to have lost its colour for Ordynov forever. He became dreamy and irritable. His impressionability took a morbid form, and he sank imperceptibly into dull, angry hypochondria. His books were sometimes not opened for weeks together. The future was closed for him. His money was being spent, and he gave up all effort. He did not even think of the future. Sometimes his old feverish zeal for science, his old fervour, the old visions of his own creation, rose up vividly from the past, but they only oppressed and stifled his spiritual energy. His mind would not get to work. His creative force was at a standstill. It seemed as though all those visionary images had grown up to giants in his imagination on purpose to mock at the impotence of their creator. At melancholy moments, he could not help comparing himself with the magician's pupil who, learning by stealth his master's magic word, bade the broom bring him water, and choked himself drinking it, as he had forgotten how to say stop. Possibly a complete, original, independent idea really did exist within him. Perhaps he had been destined to be the artist in science. So at least he himself had believed in the past. Genuine faith is the pledge of the future. But now, at some moments, he laughed himself at his blind conviction and did not take a step forward. 6 months before, he had worked out, created, and jotted down on paper a sketch of a work upon which, as he was so young, in non-creative moments, he had built his most solid hopes. It was a work relating to the history of the Church, and his warmest, most fervent convictions were to find expression in it. Now he read over that plan, made changes in it, thought it over, read it again, looked things up, and at last rejected the idea, without constructing anything fresh on its ruins. But something akin to mysticism, to fatalism, and a belief in the mysterious began to make its way into his mind. The luckless fellow felt his sufferings and besought God to heal him. The German servant, a devout old Russian woman, used to describe with relish how her meek lodger prayed, and how he would lie for hours together as though unconscious on the church pavement. He never spoke to anyone of what had happened to him, but at times, especially at the hour when the church bells brought back to him the moment when first his heart ached and quivered with a feeling new to him, when he knelt beside her in the house of God, forgetting everything and hearing nothing but the beating of her timid heart, when with tears of ecstasy and joy he watered the new radiant hopes that had sprang up in his lonely life, then a storm broke in his soul that was wounded forever. Then his soul shuddered, and again the anguish of love glowed in his bosom with scorching fire. Then
His heart ached with sorrow and passion, and his love seemed to grow with his grief. Often for hours together, forgetting himself and his daily life, forgetting everything in the world, he would sit in the same place, solitary, disconsolate, would shake his head hopelessly, and, dropping silent tears, would whisper to himself, "Katerina, my precious dove, my one loved sister." A hideous idea began to torment him more and more. It haunted him more and more vividly, and every day took more probable, more actual shape before him. He fancied, and at last he believed it fully, he fancied that Katerina's reason was sound, but that Murin was right when he called her a weak heart. He fancied that some mystery, some secret bound her to the old man, and that Katerina, though innocent of crime as a pure dove, had got into his power. Who were they? He did not know, but he had constant visions of an immense, overpowering despotism over a poor, defenceless creature, and his heart raged and trembled in impotent indignation. He fancied that before the frightened eyes of her suddenly awakened soul, the idea of its degradation had been craftily presented, that the poor, weak heart had been craftily tortured, that the truth had been twisted and contorted to her, that she had, with a purpose, been kept blind when necessary, that the inexperienced inclinations of her troubled, passionate heart had been subtly flattered, and by degrees the free soul had been clipped of its wings, till it was incapable at last of resistance or of a free movement towards free life. By degrees Ordynov grew more and more unsociable, and, to do them justice, his Germans did not hinder him in the tendency. He was fond of walking aimlessly about the streets. He preferred the hour of twilight, and by choice remote, secluded, and unfrequented places. On one rainy, unhealthy spring evening, in one of his favourite back lanes, he met Yaroslav Ilyich. Yaroslav Ilyich was perceptibly thinner. His friendly eyes looked dim, and he looked altogether disappointed. He was racing off full speed on some business of the utmost urgency. He was wet through and muddy, and all the evening a drop of rain had, in an almost fantastic way, been hanging on his highly decorous but now blue nose. He had, moreover, grown whiskers. These whiskers, and the fact that Yaroslav Ilyich glanced at him as though trying to avoid a meeting with an old friend, almost startled Ordynov. Strange to say, it even wounded his heart, which had till then felt no need for sympathy. He preferred, in fact, the man as he had been. Simple, kindly, naive, speaking candidly, a little stupid, but free from all pretensions to disillusionment and common sense. It is unpleasant when a foolish man whom we have once liked, just on account of his foolishness, suddenly becomes sensible. It is decidedly disagreeable. However, the distrust with which he looked at Ordynov was quickly effaced. In spite of his disillusionment, he still retained his old manners, which, as we all know, accompany a man to the grave. And even now he eagerly tried to win Ordynov's confidence. First of all, he observed that he was very busy, and then that they had not seen each other for a long time. But all at once, the conversation took a strange turn. Yaroslav Ilyich began talking of the deceitfulness of mankind in general, of the transitoriness of the blessings of this world, of the vanity of vanities. He even made a passing allusion to Pushkin with more than indifference, referred with some cynicism to his acquaintances, and in conclusion even hinted at the deceitfulness and treachery of those who were called friends, though there is no such thing in the world as real friendship and never has been. In short, Yaroslav Ilyich had grown wise. Ordynov did not contradict him, but he felt unutterably sad, as though he had buried his best friend.
"Ah, fancy! I was forgetting to tell you," Yaroslav Ilyich began suddenly, as though recalling something very interesting. "There's a piece of news. I'll tell you as a secret. Do you remember the house where you lodged?"
Ordynov started and turned pale.
"Well, only fancy. Just lately, a whole gang of thieves was discovered in that house. That is, would you believe me, a regular band of brigands, smugglers, robbers of all sorts, goodness knows what. Some have been caught, but others are still being looked for. The sternest orders have been given. And, can you believe it, do you remember the master of the house, that pious, respectable, worthy-looking old man? Well, what is one to think of mankind? He was the chief of their gang, the leader. Isn't it absurd?"
Yaroslav Ilyich spoke with feeling and judged of all mankind from one example, because Yaroslav Ilyich could not do otherwise. It was his character.
"And they, Murin," Ordynov articulated in a whisper. "Ah, Murin, Murin. No, he was a worthy old man, quite respectable. But excuse me, you throw a new light. Why, was he too in the gang?"
Ordynov's heart was ready to burst with impatience.
"However, as you say,"
added Yaroslav Ilyich, fixing his pewtery eyes on Ordynov, a sign that he was reflecting.
"Murin could not have been one of them. Just 3 weeks ago he went home with his wife to their own parts. I learned it from the porter, that little Tartar. Do you remember?"
The End.